The October jobs report caps off a busy economic week with lots of new data.
This data says we're nowhere near a recession. The economy doesn't show, you know, near-term risk in collapsing upon itself. There's always chance of shocks, but it appears to be slowing back down to a stable rate of about 2%, and there's no reason it couldn't stay there for a while.
Senator Elizabeth Warren details her Medicare for All plan ahead of a big candidates event in Iowa. And Google is on the move with its new acquisition of Fitbit. It's Friday, November 1st. This is the PM edition of What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren has unveiled the details of her Medicare for All plan. In a post on the blog site Medium, Warren said she'd tax billionaires and large employers to finance the $20.5 trillion needed for her plan over the next 10 years. Warren's Medicare for All plan would eliminate private health insurance and switch all Americans to a government health care system. Her plan breaks from that of her rival, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, by promising financing without raising taxes on the middle class. Warren released the details of her plan just hours before an annual candidates' dinner in Iowa. We'll have more on that event coming up in just a few minutes. President Trump is expected to tap Texas doctor and hospital executive Stephen Hahn to be the new commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration. Hahn is a radiation oncologist. He would need Senate confirmation if nominated by the president. The health risks of vaping and e-cigarettes, plus the safety of generic drugs, are among the major issues currently on the FDA's plate. Experts say the threat of wildfires in California is worsening, largely due to three main factors. Those include climate change, which is causing higher temperatures and less snow, housing construction in fire-prone areas, and overgrown forests, creating more fuel. Strong winds and dry conditions continue to stoke wildfires in California this week. The largest, the Kincaid Fire in Sonoma County, has so far burned 78,000 acres. Google is buying wearable fitness products company Fitbit as it seeks out additional revenue streams besides smartphones in consumer electronics. The $2.1 billion deal also puts Google in direct competition with Apple and its wearables, including the Apple Watch. Employers added 128,000 in new jobs in October, marking the 109th month of sustained growth. The unemployment rate ticked up just a bit from a 50-year low to 3.6%. But economists aren't worried. It shows more people are trying to get off the sidelines and into the jobs market. The solid jobs report caps off a busy economic week that also included the latest GDP reading and the Federal Reserve's third rate cut of the year. Here now to break it all down is Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Morath, joining us from Washington. So, Eric, we got a lot of economic data this week. Let's start with today's big report, October jobs. The unemployment rate notched up to 3.6%. Hiring was solid, and that was despite uncertainty over trade, which has been a continued uncertainty for a couple of months now, as well as the 40-day strike at General Motors. What stood out to you in this jobs report?
Well, what really stood out to me was that the economy still added 128,000 jobs, despite about 50,000 jobs being temporarily wiped off the payrolls due to the General Motors strike, a little bit more from some temporary layoffs at the federal government. So if you add those 50,000 jobs back in, this would be a really strong month. So the fact that hiring continued apace, I think, is a good sign for the U.S. economy.
What about potential weak spots?
Well, I mean, the weakness is clearly looking at the sectors that are exposed to the global economy. And a big area of that is the automotive industry. Even before the General Motors strike, employment across the automotive sector was declining. And I think that speaks to the trade tensions that are going on there. But I think the good news is outside of autos, manufacturing is still adding jobs, not nearly at the pace of a year ago, but still growing. So I think that shows that there's some economic stability here.
And of course, there's plenty of data in the jobs report for the Federal Reserve to absorb, as we learned this week that they may be hitting the pause button after cutting rates on Wednesday for the third time this year. Eric, what do you think the Fed's likely reading of this report will be?
Well, I think the Fed is going to like the unemployment rate. Yes, it ticked up, but it ticked up from a 50-year low. And they're going to really like the reason why it ticked up, which is that more Americans, about 300,000 more Americans, entered the labor force. So the Fed, when they had extremely low interest rates a few years ago, part of the justification for that was we want to make sure this strong economy reaches all corners and we're bringing everybody back in to the workforce. And then, of course, they went through a series of rate increases. And, you know, now several months, they've pulled back on those. And they're probably happy to see that pulling back on those coincided with low unemployment and people entering the workforce. At the same time, they're probably also relieved to see that wages, they're growing in a healthy way above inflation, but they're not accelerating, which keeps a lid on inflation.
So continuing on our data rewind, Wednesday also brought the latest GDP reading. GDP expanded by 1.9% in the third quarter, but that's a big slowdown from a year ago. So how do we read into this, especially as we're seeing signs of a growing global slowdown?
Yeah, I think what I would take away is that the pace of growth has slowed, but it's slowed back to where it was a few years ago. Most of this expansion, the U.S. has grown at about a 2% rate. And when you look underneath the GDP numbers, you really see kind of a tale of two economies. You see a consumer sector that's really strong, and you see a business sector, a business investment area, especially manufacturing area, that's not as strong. It's certainly cooled off. And I think it's the parts of the economy that are exposed to a global slowdown, are exposed to trade disputes, are not growing as fast. And that's taken a little bit of steam out of the economy. But, you know, what's still healthy is the American consumer. And that's a good thing to be relying on. You know, the U.S. isn't a country that's dependent on everyone else. It has its own power in the consumers. And those consumers are doing well, as we talked about. The unemployment rate is extremely low and wages are rising. And that means they're probably going to have the money in their pocket to continue to spend, especially as we now are entering the holiday shopping season.
All right. So a lot of data from this week, Eric. Taken together, what are your main conclusions about the strength of the U.S. economy? What are your big takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, really, my takeaway is looking even over the longer term. Step back to about 2 years ago before the big tax cuts were passed. At the time, some were saying this is going to, you know, send the economy on a much higher trajectory. Others said, you know, it could create a boom and then a bust. I think the reality is, and this data this week really confirmed it, is we got in the middle. The economy did not sustain a 3% growth rate that it achieved for a few quarters last year. But this data says we're nowhere near a recession. The economy doesn't show, you know, near-term risk in collapsing upon itself. There's always chance of shocks, but it appears to be slowing back down to a stable rate of about 2%. And there's no reason it couldn't stay there for a while.
All right. That's Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Morath joining us from Washington. Thank you so much, Eric.
Sure. Happy to join you.
And U.S. stocks rose to new highs following the October jobs report. The S&P 500 rose 1%, its third record close this week, and the Nasdaq jumped 1.1%, its first high since July. The Dow wasn't too far behind. The Blue Chips Index gained 300 points, or 1.1%. That's less than 0.3% away from highs the index reached back in July. Presidential candidates have been stumping for months, and believe it or not, we're now just a year away from heading to the polls for the 2020 election. So starting this week, we're going to be checking in on the campaigns on a regular basis, talking about the candidates, their platforms, the caucuses and primaries, and the big issues. And what better place to start than in Iowa? Our Charlie Turner spoke with reporter John McCormick about one of the top kickoff events of the season taking place tonight, the annual Iowa Party Dinner.
John, Friday night in Des Moines is being called in many quarters the main event. 14 Democratic candidates will take the stage at what is called the Liberty and Justice Celebration. What happens here? Do the candidates each speak and make their best pitch?
Yeah, so this is really sort of the final big event in Iowa before the Iowa caucuses, which will be held in about 3 months. Now, there will be other events like debates and candidate forums. But this is the last, what they call, major organizing event, where the campaigns try to get as many supporters as they can to the event. They try to make as much noise as possible. They try to organize and recruit other supporters. And so it's a big deal. It may seem sort of bizarre to the rest of America that, you know, this is such a big deal, but it really is in Iowa political circles. 12 years ago, this is the same event where Barack Obama, who would, of course, go on to become the president, he gave a really well-received speech at this event, and it really helped sort of pushes him up in the polls and head him onto a stronger direction for winning the caucuses a couple months later.
How important is it for candidates to turn out the troops for this event, you know, pack the audience?
They want to have as many people there as possible. This is also a fundraising event for the state party. So they sell tickets to this. So it does help to have some money in your campaign coffers to buy as many tickets as is allowed by the party. I think they have a limit on how many tickets each campaign can buy. But they want to pack the place with as many of their supporters as possible and get them, you know, as loud as possible so that it appears that they're having a strong reception. There's a lot of gamesmanship in this particular event, too, historically. The campaigns will often sort of march with their supporters into the arena. The local paper here, the Des Moines Register, had an item saying, you know, expect gridlock in downtown Des Moines on Friday evening because there'll be all these parades going on as the regular downtown commuters are trying to flee and, you know, go out to the suburbs or wherever they live.
Will the candidates touch on issues during the speech, including those that might be specific to Iowa and its problems, or is that not the point here?
Yeah, there's always a strong, you know, outreach to Iowans. So we'll certainly hear about agriculture and other things that sort of especially resonate with Iowans. But, you know, this campaign has also been very nationalized. So, I mean, they talk about Medicare for all, you know, as much as they talk about farmers. And I suspect what we'll hear on Friday night is that some of the candidates are going to continue to try to differentiate themselves from the others. So we saw some of that in the debate a few weeks ago where, you know, they're starting to people trying to draw contrasts with other candidates. Back again, I hearken back to this 2007 appearance by Barack Obama. He gave a very aggressive, tough speech. He never named Bill and Hillary Clinton, but they were sort of the subtext of much of his speech. And he made the argument that it was time for a new sort of politics and the triangulation of the past was no good anymore and that people had to answer questions more directly. And so it'll be interesting to see if some of these candidates, you know, sort of tee off on each other in those ways, either directly or a little bit more indirectly.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter John McCormick speaking with Charlie Turner. For the big moments from that candidate dinner and our complete 2020 election coverage, check back on our website, WSJ.com. And that's what's news for this Friday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.